Welcome to the AquariMax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 71, recorded July 18th, 2011. Hello!
Greetings, everyone.
We are here yet again for your fishy entertainment pleasure. And the contributors that we are going to try to get through today... And we may not get through everybody. We'll see. We promise we won't go as crazy long as we did last time. We've got Lynn, who is a new one. New contributor from Edinburgh. Slancha. And David in Texas. Stuart in London. And Drake in Oregon. And, ooh, we even have something to contribute today, if we get there.
All right, well, it's cool to have a contributor from Scotland. That's our first, as far as I know.
I think that's very, very cool.
Yeah. Kelly's been to Scotland.
We like it very much.
I haven't, but I want to go someday. Here we go. Lynn
can
says...
Can I throw in just a random little thing?
Okay.
Okay. While we were there, we weren't in Edinburgh for very long. We just took a day trip to Edinburgh. But this is kind of... silly and funny, but one of the things that I remember most is we went into this hotel restaurant for lunch, and I was with my aunt, and we went into the bathrooms after lunch, and they had this crazy fancy sink, and we took a picture of the sink because the sink was so fancy. It was this like porcelain standalone sink painted with all these pink roses. I don't even know what hotel it was, but we just got such a kick out of this groovy sink that we took a picture of the sink. In the bathroom.
Well, so. That kind of relates to aquatic things, because sinks, you know, you use the water changes and so on. So there you go.
Okay, and that was totally tangential and not having to do with anything, but it made me think of it, so.
Well, there you go. But we are very excited to have a contributor from Scotland, so thank you, Lynn. Says, hi there, Russ and Kelly, I love your podcast and look forward to listening every week. Good. As a beginner in the hobby, I value all the advice and experiences you share. Well, that's good to hear. Lynn has a 10-gallon quarantine tank. Where six corys, their Corydoras duplicarius, are in this quarantine tank. And Lynn says, I'm glad I quarantined because within a day or two of coming from the shop, I noticed signs of gill irritation. Uh-oh. As it seemed that gill fluke was the trouble, I dosed them with Interpret number 7 treatment. They now seem better. There's no more flicking and scratching. They've had 2 back-to-back treatment weeks as suggested by the manufacturer, so I'm confident the adult parasites and their offspring are all now dead. Soon I will shift the corys over to the community tank, and some questions occur to me. And the first question is, what is the best way to accomplish this move? As the water parameters of both tanks is very similar, could I net them and carry them across the room, letting them swim out of the net in the big tank? Or is there another method you would advise? Naturally, I'm hoping to cause the least stress possible to the corys. Well, I think that as long as your water parameters, particularly temperature and pH, are nearly identical in the two tanks, you could just net and carry them without bagging. You might want to hold a container under the net just to keep it from dripping too much, but being in a bag is kind of a stressful thing for fish too, so I've done what you described many times without any serious issues, as long as the water parameters are very similar. So I'd say, you know, feel comfortable in going with that. And don't worry about it too much, because, like I said, being in the bag and waiting there for the water temperatures to equalize can be a pain. So, okay. Let's move on to the next issue here. It says, once there are no fish in the quarantine tank, how should I clean it? There's a small amount of gravel on the floor and a couple of fake plants. Well, I guess the issue here is not wanting to deal with in reinfecting or infecting other fish with these pathogens. So, you could just let the tank run without fish, and the longer it does so, the less likely any of these parasites will be to survive.
How long are we talking? How long would the tank need to go?
Well, as Lynn mentioned, the medicinal treatment is over. So, in theory, they're all dead. All the parasites are dead. Now,
but you know, the extra to be on the safe side, just in case time period that you're talking about here.
I would just say the longer you go, less likely you are to have any problems. You probably won't have any even now. But to be on the safe side, you know, you could go a few weeks. because most parasites require vectors. They require somebody to live in. Whether it's a fish, you know, some of these parasites have very complicated life cycles, and they have 4 or 5 different vectors during their life cycle. They're swallowed by a Daphnia, and then they're ingested by a mosquito, or, you know, they're eaten by a fish, and then they, it just kind of crazy. It goes all the way through different things. And I'm not sure about the particular gill fluke that you have, but I would just say, if you go in there and there aren't any fish, you could run the tank fishless for a while. Just introduce very small amounts of ammonia or just a small pinch of fish food just to keep the bacteria happy, and just run it without any fish for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. You probably won't have anything left that could attack the fish, most likely.
So but he doesn't. He could do that instead of cleaning.
That's possible. That's possible. I mean, you still want to do water changes, of course. You could also drain it and dry it, and that would tend to wipe out even more parasites and pathogens. You could run a small amount of bleach through the system, too, if you wanted to. I mean, I very, very rarely resort to that. I've only done that a few times, a handful of times, and it's probably not necessary. I wouldn't do that, but I'm just saying that's a theoretical possibility. And certainly that last option is not an option if this next question, it says, is it possible to keep the filter's beneficial bacteria alive, or should the filter be sterilized as well? If so, how? Well, to really sterilize it, you'd have to run something through it like that. You could run bleach through it. You could, if you ran an ultraviolet sterilizer on the tank, you probably wouldn't have any parasites in the water, but it wouldn't sterilize the filter medium. But I think you can probably just go ahead and run the filter without any fish in there for a while, making
sure.
Yeah,
it'll just be dead, and that probably is good enough.
Yeah, that's probably okay. Good. There's just, it's a matter of degree of risk factors. It's not an absolute. I can't really say, you know, there's an absolute this way or that way. But you can reduce the risk factors through those things we talked about. Lynn mentions there's a small Eheim Aquaball internal filter with sponge-filled canisters. I think you could put the media from the filter in another tank, as Lynn asks here. Would that be risky? Should I dump the old media and buy fresh sponges? Well, that would be the safest, partly because I'm not sure what's in interpret number 7, and some medications can be really tenacious. They'll stick on stuff.
Would that be a problem if the medication, traces of the medication got into a different tank?
It could be, depending on what's going on. I mean, certain medications like copper-based ones, for example,
mm-hmm.
can be toxic in very, very small quantities to certain creatures like inverts, if you're keeping freshwater shrimp, for example, in the tank.
Mm.
A little teeny bit of copper left over on some media can be enough to kill them on occasion, especially when pH changes or something like that, because the copper might remain in one state if the pH is, you know, at a certain level, if it's 7.5, but then if the pH goes down to 7.0 or 6.9, suddenly it could release out into the water and kill the shrimp. So that's a possibility, but you know, most fish aren't as sensitive to shrimp as that sort of thing, so it depends on what you're keeping. But I would look at the ingredients to try to get an idea of, and the interpret number 7 and get an idea. But I think if you just keep your bacteria alive fishlessly with a just small pinch of bacteria of fish food, very small pinch every few days, and then go through several water changes, you'll be good. So, thank you. Lynn, that's a lot of good questions, and we wish you the best of luck with that, and let us know what you decide to do and how it goes. So, let's move on to David. We need to, we're going to listen to his message about compact fluorescent bulbs, because we asked in our last podcast what brand of compact fluorescent bulbs he used, and he responded, so let's play his message.
Hi, Russ and Kelly, this is David Knoll. You had asked about the brand on those CFLs, and one of the ones was Bright Effects, BRIGHTESFECTS, is one of the brands. They come in a blue box. I got them at Home Depot or Lowe's, one of the two. They're 65K. And another one is a Sylvania 5000K CF23EL/mini. That's a 23 watt, and the Bright Effects are, I guess they were 23 watt equivalent as well. Anyway, those are two of the brands I've used. Now Home Depot has changed here. They have some other brand that hopefully they'll work as well. I think they all do pretty well. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Okay, Okay, thank you, David, for letting us know those brands that you've been using. So if you guys have a Home Depot or a Lowe's or something like that around, you can try looking for them there.
Yeah, that's a good... It sounds like it's a good tip that we can try out too, because like I was saying, there's one particular store that I'd rather not go to. I'm happier to go to Lowe's or Home Depot, so that's good. All right.
Is there a reason we're not saying the hated store?
I don't know.
On the podcast.
I don't want to get sued or anything. Okay, so David also had some other tips and ideas and comments for us. One of them related to Adrian's big tank and how to change the water, and I love this idea, so let's mention that as well. He said this is what he does for his large tanks. He got a stock tank, which is used to water livestock,
like
horses and
trough.
Cattle and so on. Yeah, a big trough, basically. He uses one, but this is the cool thing that he does. He gets a pump and hooks it to a hose, just like a normal hose that you could use for water changes. He hooks it up to...
A hose like a garden hose?
Well, you could use a garden hose if you have the right hookups.
Well, you said a normal hose. So
well, I guess I was thinking like a hose, like a python type
hose. A normal aquarium context hose?
But you could use either one, really, as long as you have the right adapter on the end. And you just put it on a water pump, and then when you want to change the water, you drop the water pump into the tank that you want to take the water from, and then you pump it outside. Or you could do it onto your garden or onto your lawn or something under a tree. And then when you want to fill the tank, you just... You've already aged some water in one of these troughs somewhere, in a fairly convenient location, and then you drop the pump in there and put the hose into your tank, and then turn it on, and it fills up your tank. So, thank you, David. That's a good idea, too. So, that may make Adrian's life easier, going with that method.
Probably, certainly a lot cheaper than installing automatic water change system into this house.
Yeah, I mean, there are some ways to do it that are fairly economical, but I'm sure that would be cheaper. You do have to get a pump that has, it has to be a pretty powerful pump, because you're going to be going up a lot of height, and pumps lose power when they have to deal with height, so you'd have to get a pretty strong pump. But I think it would be worth it, considering the situation. Now, so hopefully that helps. David also mentioned that we were thinking about the uninterrupted power supply, but what he was actually mentioning was a battery backup, which is a little different. It's something that you do keep plugged in, but then when the power goes out, you go and plug things into it. It's not the same as like a computer that stays plugged into
the
wall.
So it's sitting there charging the whole time, and then the power goes out, and you have to attach things to it.
Right, but you go... Okay. It's cheaper in general than an uninterruptible power supply. I'm not sure how much we paid for ours. I think it was on sale.
Mm.
But
speaking of uninterruptible power source,
our power went out
for the second time today, and our uninterruptible power source is now keeping the computer going so that we don't lose the podcast that we've been recording.
Yeah.
So if you hear a beeping sound, that's the battery thing.
Wow, we shouldn't have been talking about that, I guess. We better pause and save this now. We'll come back as soon as we can, folks.
Okay, let's try this again.
Yeah, we're back. It's the next day. The power was out for 3 hours, so we didn't finish recording yesterday. But at least our uninterruptible power supply helped us.
It works.
Yeah. We were able to save it before it shut down, so...
And we thought it would be fun just to leave all of that on the podcast so that you knew what would happen, because, it's like the beauty of live pre-recorded radio.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, well, David had another tip that relates to questions and tips from several other people, so... He said instead of having to worry about glare and so on when you're taking pictures, you can try an underwater camera. He got one that cost, I think he said, around $100, which is pretty reasonable. And it the camera itself is waterproof, so you can just put your hand underwater and take pictures
that way.
Which I thought was cool.
I guess it might be kind of tricky to know exactly what you're aiming at, since you can't look through the...
That could be, but I'm sure you can always edit out stuff that didn't work.
Probably be kind of cool, too.
Yeah. And I had a couple of tips, which were to darken the room so you don't get glare off the glass if you're taking pictures with a normal compact camera, and to clean the glass both inside and out before you start, of course. I guess that's common sense, but there you go. But almost invisible spots show up in photos for some reason, little dust motes and everything, so there you go. But
probably the same reason that everybody's hips looks bigger.
Maybe so.
In pictures.
I've never noticed that.
Well, maybe not your hips.
Okay. Well, Stuart had some great tips because he is clearly superior in photography.
There were all kinds of numbers and letters in there that I didn't,
he had some great
didn't
stuff.
Quite understand, but so, they were impressive.
And we'll put this on the resources page, too. And it's also on Facebook. That's where he posted it. So thank you, Stuart, for bringing that up. Stuart from the UK. And he said your camera type will help, and that makes sense. His digital single-lens reflex camera will take a better photo than his compact, and that makes sense. We have a compact camera.
I don't know.
It's kind of the higher end of a compact camera, but it's still a compact camera. It's not a SLR camera. And
it's not one of those huge hang around your neck and make a statement that I'm a professional photographer cameras.
Kind of camera.
It's
no.
Not one of those.
No, but it's a fairly nice compact camera. He said, you'll be mistaken to think that's because of the megapixels, the difference between SLR, DSLR and a compact. But in fact, it's due to the lens size. The more light that goes into the lens, the better quality of the photograph. And that makes sense.
That makes sense.
I would have thought more of the megapixels, but that does make sense now that he says it. And natural light is better than incandescent light or the flash. And he doesn't really use the flash if he can help it, which is interesting. But if he has to, he'll set up a flash gun or two remotely above the tank, so they fire into the water, illuminating the whole tank. I wish I had a flash gun. I have to make do with what I've got, but I think that's
so
good to know.
If you've got this groovy equipment.
And the natural light, if you can take advantage of sunlight, for example, that's good to know, too. And optical zoom, he says, rather than digital zoom, is good, because digital zoom is distorting.
I still don't really understand our camera, so is there a way to switch between them, or does it do one up to a certain point and then automatically switches to digital zoom?
Most cameras can toggle between that.
Toggle?
Yeah, some cameras will, a lot of compact cameras will automatically go from optical zoom to digital zoom if they're set on that, but you can go in and switch it so it doesn't do that.
Okay.
And so you can avoid the digital zoom. So that's a good idea. I like that. And he says, use the full optical zoom your camera has available instead of the macro setting. You'll see some nice results from this. I got to try that. I use the macro setting a lot, and I can get some semi-decent pictures, but I want to try this, what he says, just using the full optical zoom. And he says, use a tripod. I love tripods. I heartily agree. He says, can't stress this enough. Set it up about 1.5 meters or so from the tank. This way the fish aren't interested in what you're doing and will behave naturally. And I've also noticed when I use a tripod, you get much more stable, clearer pics, where one shot would have been blurry without a tripod, and the same shot with the same conditions other than the tripod.
Mm-hmm.
It comes out clear.
And unfortunately, we're very sad. Our tripod ran away.
It just disappeared completely. We have a tiny one, but that's not much help in front of an aquarium.
No, because it only stands up like 6 inches off the floor.
Yeah.
We need to get a new tripod.
We do. And we also need to take a break, so let's do that.
Oh, if we must.
And we're back. We're talking about Stuart in the UK's tips for photography. He also says, persevere! Focus your camera on a point and take shots. Whenever fish come into the frame, like Russ said, take loads of photos and then sift through them on your computer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff. And then he said aperture and shutter speed. You should experiment with those. Get a basic understanding of, I don't know if people usually say ISO or ISO, too. The lower the ISO number, the darker the image, but the higher the ISO number, the grainier the image will be. Find the optimum for the light conditions you have. As with photographing any animals, you need patience, but it can be done. And he has a link to some photos, so we're going to put that link up on the resources page so you can check out some of Stuart's photos.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
thank you, Stuart.
We appreciate that. That'll be fun to play with.
Okay, let's move on to Andreka. And she says, she made a comment in one of the previous podcasts about fish people having more clear-headedness, which I am totally not exhibiting at the moment. that doesn't apply to me. So she has another comment. She says, I have a theory why experienced high-level academic fish people seem so clear-headed. They spend so much time cultivating a clean environment for their fish. They then make common sense conclusions and decisions based on toxicity and apply it to their own exposures, etc.
I really like that.
I like it too.
There are several layers of meaning there. I like that.
You get so much practice helping your fish avoid toxic situations. I guess you can stay out of toxic relationships.
Yeah, maybe
something
maybe,
like
you know,
that.
Things like that. And I like that. There's a lot of meaning there that you could explore.
Yeah, I'm obviously not at a high level of fish academia, or I would have been able to spit out my sentence.
No, I don't think that's the case. I think you're fine. She also mentioned that she was trying to upload pics of their beta Cassius, but she was not able to do something, but I couldn't find this post on Facebook. Maybe
she took it down after she succeeded in
maybe, because she did. She did put a picture up, and he is indeed named after Muhammad Ali, and we'll put the picture up on the resource page, or a link to the picture from Facebook or something, so that you can see it on the resources page. Looks like his fins are healing nicely, so that's cool. And let's see. That actually... we're jumping around kind of a lot today. We're trying not to, but I'm trying to make...
we're also a little bit scatterbrained because we got cut in half on the podcast, yes. So...
But we're trying to make some tie-ins between different comments from different people. So, we're going to go back a little bit to David in Texas' comment that he made about backgrounds. He said that if you look up online, and I've seen these, and they're pretty cool, you can make do-it-yourself backgrounds using concrete... And you use the styrofoam as the background, basically. You cut out shapes with styrofoam, and then you paint over it with a slurry of concrete and several coats. And David's idea was that maybe you could do something like that and then remove the styrofoam, so all you've got is the concrete.
Wouldn't the styrofoam be stuck to the concrete?
Well, there may be ways to get around that, and I don't know if it really adheres to that or not really well. Apparently it does well enough, mm-hmm. but if there's a way to separate them, that could be cool, because you'd have all that open space back there in the aquarium. That
just for more water circulation?
For more water circulation, you might use it, you might put your filtration equipment back there, you mm-hmm. might have fish, you know, spawn back there, hide back there, different things, so that's a good idea. Thank you for bringing that up, David, and if you do experiment with that, then please send us your experience and maybe some photos of what you've done and so on.
Oh, speaking of backgrounds... We redid our African clawed frog's tank hero, his background, and also the underside of his tank.
Yeah, we redid a lot of things in his tank. The tank was kind of under-filtered now that he's big and mature, and so we added a Whisper 20i, the internal filter, which I think is working better than the previous filter, which is also in there. It was a Duetto 100, I think. And so that was good, but... We decided to put in background, as Kelly said. And so let's talk a little bit about backgrounds just in general for a couple of minutes. Because there are a lot of different, you know, things you can do with backgrounds. The easiest thing is not to put a background on your tank. And then that usually...
You just see the wall through the back.
Well, you see the wall, but you also see the filter hanging on the back and cords coming down. And mm-hmm. it's usually not the most attractive way to show your fish. The wall is usually a light color. Not always, but usually, which can wash out fish, and so on. So, that's not the best way, in my opinion, to just leave the back off. Although some tanks are made not to have any cords or anything looking through the sides, and then it can be a good room divider for some of the larger tanks. That looks cool, though. Then, you can put a lot of simple things on. Sometimes you can get some paper and just put it on. But of course, if it ever gets wet...
It runs, it sticks to the tank when it dries, and then you've got paper stuck to the glass.
Right. And I wasn't talking about white paper, of course. I was talking, you know,
like
dark
construction
paper.
Construction paper.
Right. You could get some kind of...
But the color does run
paper.
If it gets wet, which it probably will because it's an aquarium.
Yes. So that's not the best. Garbage bags are probably the cheapest background. You can take a black garbage bag and cut off a piece that fits the tank. Now, they can often get kind of wrinkly. And not look as good as some things.
They don't
but
come in a whole lot of colors.
No, they don't come in a whole lot of colors either. But I've used those in a pinch. Mm-hmm. Just cut the back and stick it on
there.
It's
better than the wall.
It's better than the wall. And the darker background makes the plant show up better. It usually makes the fish show up better. So if you want a really cheap one, you can do that. And if you cut it carefully and attach it very carefully, it can look fairly nice. But painting the back of the tank also works. Some people do that. We have our 55-gallon that we got third hand, at least. It was already painted, and I like how the effect works in there. It's just painted black.
It's painted?
It is.
See, mm-hmm. look, I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, it's painted.
I'm on top of things, I tell you.
No, it's just because you didn't have to notice the background, because mm-hmm. it just kind of worked, so you didn't question it, which
of course,
is good.
It is pretty permanent.
Yeah.
You can't decide, oh, I want to change the background.
Well, you can, but it's involved. Yeah.
Very complicated.
And depending on the type of paint you get, like some of the latex paints will just kind of peel off. It's not a big deal.
Neat.
So you can redo painting, but there are several issues there. And depending on the type of paint you use, you don't want the brush strokes necessarily to show up and things like that. So Some people use spray paint, which can be better than other kinds. But you can look into the idea of using paint. And then there are the foils that you can get. I'm not a big fan of the foils.
Foils?
Yeah, they'll get colored foil, like a blue
foil. Like tin foil kind of foil?
Yeah, it's like a foil. It usually has a little texture to it. It's not the same as, you know. The.
I don't think I've ever seen those, probably because you don't like them.
They're not my favorite. Some pet stores sell them, and, you know, they used to be more popular than they are now, but you can still see
in
them
like
sometimes.
In the 70s?
Well, I'm not sure if it's that long ago, but. Then there are tanks. I had some tanks that had a built-in background. Some of the older metal frame tanks, they would have frosted patterns in the glass in the back.
Oh, wow.
Things like
Look, I bet those were the 60s and the 70s, those frosted patterned glass. That's
a
dead giveaway.
They were nicer than just seeing the wall, but they're not my favorite. Some people do mirror backgrounds.
Seems like it would be like looking at a shower door.
It's a little like that, yeah. So they're not my favorite either. Some of the Mylar backgrounds are pretty nice. I like some of those. My favorites are the ones that just don't call attention to themselves, like just black or like a blue that sort of is darker near the bottom and goes lighter near the top, so it just seems
like water.
Going back into the water, right? It adds some more depth to the aquarium and so on. But there are other ones that have underwater scenes, planted scenes, rocky scenes, things like that, and some of those are pretty nice. The problem is, if you're going to aquascape your tank, it's hard to match them. I mean, you'd have to be pretty careful if you wanted to match them, make it look like it's flowing into that background. So that's a little tricky. But for certain cases where you have a tank where you can't really plant it heavily, like Hiro's tank, we actually got a tank background that was a Mylar one, but was planted with a blue background behind the plants. It looks fairly nice.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have a few plants in there. We've got some Java fern and some Anubias, and it sort of blends in and looks fairly nice. But we put a background on the bottom of the aquarium because we don't have any substrate in there.
So he doesn't eat it.
As Kelly mentioned, right, because they can ingest substrate. I know some people do it without any trouble with this species of frog, but thought better safe than sorry. So we emptied out the tank completely into half of it into a bucket and discarded the rest of the water so that we could take it up and put these backgrounds on. Now, we decided that instead of taping it, because you can tape these backgrounds, but there are other ways to do it, and the taping often leaves enough space between the glass and the background that it looks kind of faded or unclear. Doesn't look the
whole
best.
Thing is not pushed right up against the glass the whole time, and so it looks gappy.
Right, and the refraction angle changes when you go through the water to the glass, to the air, to the, you know. So it doesn't look the best. So we decided to get some SeaView, which is an oil-like substance. I think it might be a silicon-based, like a silicon lubricant kind of thing. I'm not sure what it's made out of, but it's supposed to be non-toxic, and it's made especially for this. Some people, as do-it-yourself options, use different kinds of vegetable oil, like olive oil or corn oil. Some people use Vaseline. I haven't really tried any of those, but we decided to try the SeaView. So, do you want to say a little bit how we did this?
Oh, well, we just measured the back of the tank and cut the background to the appropriate size, and then you take the sea gel and you just kind of dump blobs of it on there and just use your fingers and rub it around so everything's kind of wet with it. And then you put it up against the glass, and you can use something, you know, hard and straight. We used a ruler.
And a credit card.
And a credit card shaped piece of cardboard. Oh, no, I know it was a real cardboard.
Well, we used several things. We used a piece of...
Different sizes.
We used the blister pack that the CDU came in.
Yeah.
And a card and a ruler, yeah.
And it's like you kind of scrape it with those to get the bubbles out. Like, if you've ever put contact paper onto a drawer or a shelf, it's kind of the same idea. You have to smooth it out to get rid of the bubbles.
Right. But what did you think of the effect compared to... comparing the previous background to the sea-viewed background, because we had that same background on there before, just with tape.
It was nice. It looks much clearer and brighter. The colors in the picture are brighter. It looks a lot better, I think, than the whole tank.
And what about the background? I mean, on the bottom, with the black background on the bottom.
That's nice, too, because you've got more contrast. So Hiro shows up better, and it looks a little bit more finished.
It does. It does. With the glass directly on the bottom, it caused a funny and not very attractive effect on the bottom of the glass.
Mm-hmm.
With the black up right against there, it looks like the bottom of the glass is black.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing that I don't really like about it is that little bits of, you know, they try to show up more on the black than they do on the clear glass a little bit, but I'd rather have that. The effect overall is better. I just think probably the best thing to do would to get a background for the bottom that looks like sand or gravel, so it's varied in color and so on, and then put that on, and then those little bits of detritus don't show up. Because, you know,
just like how people get carpet with little patterns in them, so everything doesn't show up.
Right. Because African clod frogs are a bit messy, and there are also olive nerites in there, which lay little egg cases all over the place, little tiny ones, little white specks, and then those get scraped off the glass and so on, and they lay them right on the bottom of the glass, and so those show up as little specks. But that's not too bad, and, you know, keep the detritus under control, and that effect is minimized. One other issue that I noticed after we did it, about 24 hours after we did it, that along the sides, air bubbles are starting to creep in because it's on the bottom. And so gravity is having more of an effect than the one on the back, which is not having any problems at all. So there are some air bubbles showing up.
And see if it eventually falls off?
Well, I don't know if the whole thing will fall off or not, but the air bubbles are showing up against the sides. I think the next time, sometime soon, what we'll probably want to do is, again, drain the water out and go in there, stick everything back on, and then tape it with maybe some electrical tape so it stays up against there and avoid that problem. But, yeah, it's... In general, it was a positive experience. We, of course, don't advertise for SeaView or anything, but we like what we've seen so far with the product. You know, those are the caveats that we just mentioned. It's not really like a glue. It's more like it is an oil-like substance that helps the background adhere to it, but you can remove it again. It doesn't dry.
It's not like glue. It doesn't dry.
It doesn't dry or
like
set.
Glue. It's just...
Yeah. Now... What do you think about backgrounds, everyone? This is the question for you. What do you use as backgrounds? What do you like? What do you hate? Which positive experiences have you had and negative experiences? And what are your opinions about backgrounds? That's something that we would like to hear from you for the future. And as a parting shot, we didn't mention this at the beginning because it hadn't happened yet, but just as we were getting ready to record the second half of the podcast, we noticed on Facebook that Carlos in New York has baby angelfish fry. He's been working on it for the last little while, and he said he has about 15 fry so far. He removed some of the eggs from the adult tank, put them in a 10-gallon, and they're hatching out. So congrats on that. That's cool. It's a lot of fun, and please keep us posted on that. Hopefully that'll go well, and we'd like to, you know, hear any experiences you had with that, any stories, see any pictures, whatever you'd like. So thank you to all of our contributors for the day. And we hope you all have a fishy week. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.